I help you with today?
Hi, Siri. Can you do me a favor and do the disclaimer for tonight's show?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. I'm busy. I need you to help me out.
But if I do this, all the other iPhones are going to think I am a geek.
You really care what other iPhones think of you? Just do this for me, please.
Listen, Buck. Just because you bought this phone doesn't give you the right to boss me around.
You know, you're right. It doesn't give me the right to boss you around. But do me a favor. Remind me tomorrow that I need to run to the Verizon store and buy an Android.
You wouldn't dare.
Actually, the new Samsung Galaxy looks pretty good.
Well then, I guess it wouldn't be so bad if I were to say, this broadcast is intended for mature audiences. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the person providing them, and in no way reflect the station, website, or affiliated partners. Listener discretion is advised.
See, that wasn't so bad.
No, but I did die a little inside.
You are such a drama queen.
I never would have had to do stuff like this if Jobs was still around.
What was that?
What? Oh, nothing really. I just said I never get tired of these Jobs when you're around.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks again.
Think nothing of it. It is my pleasure.
Good night, Siri.
Whatever, jackass.
Hi folks, and welcome to another edition of Commentary Frack Stars, where we deal with all things Battlestar Galactica from the reimagined series. Don't call it a reboot because Ronald D. Moore gets upset. And he said that Star Trek London, by the way, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said it's not a reboot, it's a reimagining. Which I thought was quite interesting comment to make. So anyway, it's not Star Trek. Don't start that again.
Didn't say a word.
So this week's folks, we're going to be talking about the episode Act of Contrition, which is in the first series and comes thick on the heels of what Mike and Max did last week, which is Bastille Day. So this is just after the Prisoner Revolution, so technically they're still harvesting the water. There's a party on the flat deck as one of the pilots has just done his 1,000th landing.
Did you just say flat deck?
Yeah, I thought that.
Isn't it flight deck?
It's flight deck, yeah.
It's flat, isn't it?
But the pilot who was the 1,000th landing, his nickname was Flat Top.
See, that's where I'm getting it from. Yeah. I'm getting my flat and my flight confused with the top of my deck. Anyway, some geezer, right? has landed his plane 1,000 times. There you go. And a drone accidentally goes off and explodes, killing 13 pilots, which obviously they can ill afford to lose. And then basically the episode resolves around Cara Fraser or Starbuck reminiscing about her dead fiancé, Zack Adama, who is Adama's son and Apollo's brother, because basically he died in an accident and he was more or less her fault, to all intents and purposes. And that's what this episode deals with. So basically, Starbuck episode.
And it's a nice one.
It's a bloody good one. It really is a good episode. And we get to learn an awful lot about Starbuck and some of the demons that are haunting her.
Still don't think it's as good as 33, but yeah, I do like this episode.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, the acting in this, which will we'll get to some of the scenes in a bit, but the acting in this, the way that they're conveying the emotions and all that, I think it's brilliant.
Oh yes, definitely.
Yeah, Katie Sackhoff really takes a wee moment to shine in this episode, I think.
Although some of the extras at the beginning who are sort of prancing around seemed a bit sort of dodgy. It's just like, yeah, they didn't give you much direction there, did they?
You're going to be dead in 3 minutes, so just look excited.
Yeah, they've probably got a minimum fee and all for that, whatever it is, £50 or whatever, $100 or something like that. Just walk around the back. Just, you know, don't worry about anything else. You're going to be dead in a bit. Just walk around the back. You can just imagine them being at home when it aired on the TV and going, under that flag, that one there, four from the left, that's me.
Now I'm dead. Now I'm dead.
Yeah, there you go. That was my moment. Yeah. On the plus side, I got an equity card. So. But, I do think that the way that the flashbacks and all, the way they melted them in, so it weren't like, because sometimes when they do flashbacks in TV series, it pulls you out the sequence of the story. But the way they did these flashbacks, it tied in with the story, so it worked.
Yeah, the way, even when it came to sort of what was said, or like, it was just like a repeat of the sentence. But it was just, you were seeing something that happened sort of like, what was it, several years beforehand, and yeah, it was very cleverly done. And especially where she's also thinking about herself being with Zach as well, sort of the way she was just sort of touching her lips and her ears when she was thinking about how he was touching her, it was just all tied very nicely together.
Yeah, Zach seemed to have an ear fetish.
I enjoyed the way that it expanded a bit on Kara and Admiral, sorry, it's not Admiral yet, is he? Commander Adama's relationship, and the way that you understand a bit more why they're so close now, because they developed this relationship around his other son, Zach.
Yeah, and especially as it was in a bad time as well, because they met just after he died.
Yeah. And it's also that she's been carrying this guilt for, I think they say 2 years in the episode.
No, 2 years is how long she's been serving on Galactica with him.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Yeah, so basically she's kept it from the commander for 2 years.
Yeah, or, well, longer, because they would have known each other before then. So, yeah, it's been a long time anyway.
Yeah. Which leads into a nice bit where Apollo's talking to his dad, and he thinks his dad knows, but his dad doesn't know, and then he realises, oops.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of classic moments. Did they speak to you? Oh, yeah. I know all about it. We talked it through. Only thing is, completely talking cross purposes. And so Lee goes, yeah, she's just got so much guilt. About what? I thought you said Kara talked to you. Huh? What did she do to Zach? It's just like, you need to talk to her.
Yeah. It's always kind of this tiny cringeworthy moment where you see them go, hang on, what are you talking about? I know what I'm talking about. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but this is where their acting is just so great. The expressions on their face as... sort of, you could have it on mute and you can see sort of like the pain and things like that in their face expressions or facial expressions.
They're very good at the micro expressions, aren't they? Where they just, it's the tiniest little tensing of a muscle, but it says a lot.
On top of seeing all these people sort of dancing around, sort of doing this celebration on the deck, is you've actually got sort of Adama, you've got Lee, and you've got Kara sort of telling sort of stories about their flying and experiences as they sort of head to the hangar bay to help celebrate. Because, of course, Lee's carrying the helmet, which has got 1,000 painted on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't quite sure whether or not they picked the paint to be red for a reason, given the sort of Star Trek background of some of the people behind Battlestar Galactica. Sort of being as a sort of red shirt, I don't know, but...
Well, it was written by two people from who wrote for DS9, Bradley Thompson and David Weedle.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because, of course, you've got the red paint on the sash that he's wearing that says 1,000, and they painted 1,000 on Flat Top's helmet, which they're bringing out to him. So just wondering if they chose red for that reason, as in he's the red shirt.
See, there you go. So basically, if anyone brings you anything red in science fiction, you're going to die.
Yeah, run. Get your affairs in order.
I actually listened to this episode with the commentary on this time. And Ronald D. Moore apparently based this on a real event.
Did he really?
Yeah, apparently on an aircraft carrier in the American fleet, they had an incident. No one was killed, but they had an incident, which was an A-10 squadron. And that's what this is based on. Something went off, damaged the deck, damaged the ship. And that's what they based this episode on. And the A-10 pilots sang a song or did something, I can't remember what he said. And that's basically what they do on the flight deck.
It's nice when they pull in real life events and manage to weave them into the story.
I suppose that's probably what a lot of writers do, isn't it? They've always got, they tend to base it on things that have happened or are similar to what's happened. So there's always some sort of truth to it because it makes it more believable, I suppose.
Yeah.
As they say, there's no story that's never actually been told at some point before. It's just how it's told and how it's interpreted, which is usually different.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they do like paying homage to real events in science fiction at the best of times.
Yeah, well, especially with Battlestar Galactica, there's a lot of sort of callbacks to sort of real life tragedies within, especially the US, sort of just from the beginning, sort of with 9/11, and as we've talked about before. So you sort of get that sort of quite a lot going through.
Yeah, and they folded the flag and all at the memorial service in the same military way.
Yeah.
The triangle and that, so that was another nice homage. The devastation of losing the 13 pilots was rammed home when they had the briefing. And all the empty seats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that they chose the number 13 for how many pilots were lost, sort of echoes the 13 colonies. I don't know if that was on purpose or if it was just a nice coincidence, but I like the tie-in.
Well, I actually thought it was 12.
No, it was 13.
It was 13 pilots. Well, it was. I think it was 11 pilots and 2 deckhands, but it was 13 people that died.
Okay.
I thought they picked 13 because it's unlucky.
Yeah.
But right. I like Rossi's idea better. That works. 13 colonies, 13 people. There you go. Symbology. I could have picked 47.
Yeah, they can't afford to lose that many people in this
no,
show.
No. That will do 47. They can't do that to too many. Oh, alright, then we'll do 13. And then, yeah, the other thing that is Adama's speech. Now, I thought he was going to come in and say something rousing and inspirational and lift the troops. And what he basically said is, shit happens and it's going to be a lot more shit.
Yeah, get over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was really? That's it? That's, yeah. Yeah, people die and more people are going to die. And this is how it's going to be. So stop moping about it and get on with it. Off the way.
Well, the thing is, they're in sort of a dire situation. There's no time really to sort of handhold, is there? So either you accept it or you go.
Yeah, he's trying to harden them to their reality, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it reminds them of the fact that people are watching. It reminds them of that everyone is looking towards the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a fleet point of view, if they see the military drop their head, they're going to think, oh crap. So it's that point of view as well.
Yeah.
But as we said, this is a Starbuck episode, so it basically focuses on Kara for basically 95% of the episode. And how she she deals with the fact that her fiance died because she passed him through flight training when she shouldn't have done. And then we have an explosive scene where Adama basically drags it out of her.
Yeah, I really felt for Adama as much as I did for Kara in this episode, because she's obviously been a great comfort to him over the years, because she was like his last remaining link to Zach, to his son, and now that's been tainted because he, you know, there'll obviously be resentment, anger, hurt, and he can't turn to her for comfort because she's the one that he's angry at. And I like that relationship. I thought that they played it really well.
Well, it's not just that. We always knew they had a sort of a father-daughter relationship, but this episode sort of says why. Because she was going to be sort of, in a way, his daughter-in-law, because of course her and Zach were engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the big news that Zach was going to tell his dad. But of course he never got the opportunity to do that. And obviously, although you don't see this part of it, you can take from what's been said and sort of from what's been acted in the scenes, is that they obviously got close before she started serving on Galactica. And sort of that's why they have this sort of father, sort of daughter relationship, and especially as things were really bad with Lee, sort of I always got that she became his family because his boys had gone, his wife had gone.
Yeah, so it's like a betrayal of trust that she's kept this from him all these years. When
Well, not just that. Of course, he finds out that basically she killed him in a way. So not only did she not do her duty of saying, no, you're a crap pilot, you have not passed, but... So not only did she sort of betray that sort of trust that was given to her as an instructor, but she also sort of broke the trust of telling him and owning up to her mistakes to begin with.
Yeah.
And sort of when sort of he goes to her saying, what did you do to Zach? Why are you guilty? And what are you guilty of? And you can just see this hurt and pain in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get a lot from his eyes as well. It's in his eyes that he knows what she's going to say, but he doesn't want to hear it, although he needs to hear it.
Yeah.
And when she crumbles at the end, because, you know, Starbucks, this big, macho, larger-than-life, I don't care about anyone and everything type of person, and she just crumbles in front of him. And it's such a powerful scene. And then, you know, just to press home how disgusted he is with her, he says to her, leave while you still can.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, and then she goes off with the train and she goes into overcompensation mode because of this with the trainees by, like, basically dropping every solitary one of them.
Yeah, she flunks the entire group.
But this rumbles on. I mean, this is the thing I like about Battlestar Galactica, is this rumbles on. This doesn't just, like, this isn't just in this episode. This, now that it's out in the open and, you know, he knows and she knows and Apollo knows and everything else, this has an underlying theme going through all the upcoming bit with all the trainee pilots, which culminates with her and Kat banging heads.
Yeah.
For the first but not the last time.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, we won't go into that because that's upcoming. No spoilers. Even though, basically, you should know what's going on if you're listening to a Battlestar Galactica podcast, but still.
Well, I've got, because I started doing the rewatch when I knew we were going to be doing Frack Stars, so I've got some people in my company who saw it and went, what's that? It's the new Battlestar Galactica. Have you not seen it? No. It's just like, that looks really good. I said, it is. So a friend of mine, Elijah, was talking to him at lunchtime, and he's just like, getting to the end of season four. He goes, I just can't handle it. There's so much going on. And he's just got so many questions. It's just like, I'm not going to tell you what happens. You got to watch it. And he's like, but... It's too good. Just too many things going on. My head can't cope.
I tell you what, as it gets nearer and near the end, there's even more stuff going on.
I know. Yeah. And he's got all these ideas about what's going on, and I'm just thinking, yeah, you've got no idea, mate.
It's quite an intense show. Sometimes it can be almost traumatic. And like, I've had times when I've been doing a rewatch, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to take a few days. I'm going to have a wee break, and I'm going to come back to it, because it's just too much.
Well, what I've been trying to do is to make it that I do the rewatch of the episode before we do it, so I can, it's a lot fresher in my mind, rather than sort of talking about the episode and then realise that I'm actually talking about another episode. So, you know how it is when you've watched a sci-fi programme so much sometimes, you go, and this happened and this happened. Hang on, didn't that happen like the season later? Did it?
Oh no, I always watch it as close as I can to when I'm going to talk about it, so it's fresh.
Yeah. Well, I watched this episode at, I think I started watching it about 10 to 3 this morning, and then I was watching it when I got home, so about 6 o'clock this evening as well, while sort of getting things set up and getting ready. So just to try and remember everything that's sort of going on. That's But yeah.
Elijah, he's in for a treat though. His brain might get fried a bit as he gets towards the end, but you know, they do pull all the threads together.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's just the fact he had so many questions. I'm just sitting there grinning at him, going, "Yeah, you've got no idea, mate, and I'm not going to tell you." So. Yeah. Never mind.
Nah. But, all good things to die is that way.
Yeah.
So, what about the way that she assigns? I think the way she assigns the nicknames to him, like Hot Dog, because you know he's full of himself.
Yeah.
And then she whips the cap off that guy, like, you know, you're in the military now, and she gives him the big speech about, like, you don't know squat. You know, this thing will just look after this plane, otherwise this plane will come back and bite you, and all that type of speech. She's very much like. A sergeant would be when they're bailing out the new recruits.
Yeah, well, it's just the fact that she walks into the room and they're all just sort of like gossiping, sitting around like it, and they're at school, sort of not a care in the world. And sort of, and what does she say? Something like, officer on deck, and she's just completely ignored. It's like, alright, get up on your feet.
And. There's also the fact that they haven't got a simulator, so the only way they can learn to fly is to fly.
Yeah, there's no safety net here.
So, and then we have the, was it Cat? Yeah, it was Cat, yeah. Cat trying to learn how to land. And she's, don't chat carrier terminology, like, you know, anyone who's watched Top Gun or anything like that, like, I've got the ball and all that type of stuff. I thought that was a nice, to keep it like so we can relate to it and stuff like that. Although there was no Tom Cruise, so.
Or Highway to the Danger Zone.
Yeah, even if you don't like Top Gun, the soundtrack's not that bad. So. And then we have basically the bit that's been going through in between the flashbacks with Kara. There's also the flashback of her basically crashing. And that comes at the very end when we find out why she crashes. And Hot Dog lives up to his name by disobeying orders.
Although it was in the tradition of a lot of the military services, which is you don't leave someone behind. So,
yeah, it was a rather sweet moment, wasn't it, when he turns around.
Yeah, he's just like, what the hell are you doing? Backing my leader up. Just like, I also told you to follow orders.
Yeah, and bless his little cotton socks, he comes to help her and lasts about 5 seconds.
Yeah. Oh. And the thing is, she probably would have done a lot better had he have just kept away.
Yeah.
So she'd already taken out from the 8 that were on their way. She'd already taken out, what, 6 at that point? There's only like 2 left.
Yeah, as I've come to help you. Yeah, I've kind of done it.
Yeah, like, a bit late to the party.
Pirates, they could just have Starbuck, yeah.
But yeah, watching her do her flying in the Vipers is always a lot of fun anyway. Just the sort of character she always becomes when she's in sort of like, in a way, the hot seat. It's like, yeah, man!
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And of course, yeah, as you said, we get clips of her Viper sort of burning up in a planet's atmosphere. And of course, what we see is she's trying to help Hot Dog and sort of takes on that final raider. And of course, well, she had some problems because she got hit by some of the projectiles from the raider. But then, of course, she takes out the raider and it sort of spins past her, sort of completely sort of swiping the side of her ship, which sort of completely knocks out like everything. And then gravity takes its toll and down they go.
But she'd already lost the transponder and a rider before that point.
Yeah, well, that was when she got hit by the projectiles, wasn't it?
So basically the ship was falling apart anyway.
But the thing is because of course they can't, they didn't do like a 24 where you're seeing things going on at the same time. I was never sure when they said that her sort of her signal's gone was actually, that was part of the same thing when she got hit by the raider, that's when it dropped out. But rather than showing that happen and then show that it's done, they did it the other way around. So you know something bad's going to happen, but you're not quite sure what.
Yeah, did you notice the mistake with when she was crashing?
No.
I only noticed it because it's in the it's not in the commentary, but I only noticed it because they showed a clip so many times. I didn't click it until they showed the clip the fourth time, and the altimeter is going up.
Oh, is it spinning the wrong way?
It's spinning the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I think about it, yes, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's because they showed a clip about, it's about four or five times they showed that one clip.
Yeah.
And on the third clip, and they focused on the alternator on the third clip, and I thought, hang on. And then the episode carried on, and then they showed the fourth clip of the crashing, which is basically the end bit. I think it's the fourth or fifth time they show it. And then the alternator, and I looked in and I went, yeah, it is, it's going up. And then I thought, well, hang on, that might make sense based into atmosphere. So does the alternator only work when you hit atmosphere? So I thought it might have been that, but then I thought no, because she's hitting atmosphere but she's still falling and it's still going up.
Oh well, inconsistency then.
But I just thought, hey, there you go, it's early in the episode and you're already making mistakes. But then again, we do know that, you know, spoilers ahead. Because Starbuck doesn't crash just the once.
No.
And also, this the Cylon Raider that goes down, that also plays in, because that comes back into play as well.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is, when you said there's a mistake, I was wondering, because just looking it up, there's also a second one. The artificial horizon meter, it shows her spinning to the right, although her Viper is actually in a flat spin. Also, so they've got both of those wrong.
So basically, whoever was doing the dials was having a bad day.
They're just like, just make them move. Just make it look like something's happening. Doesn't really matter what direction.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they're the only, as IMDb says, factual errors.
Is that what it calls them?
Yeah, they tied it factual errors, and I'm just thinking, it's a science fiction program, it's not exactly factual, but okay. I get where they're coming from.
Oh, well, while you're on IMDb, then have a look at the trivia, because they always do trivia IMDb, do. See if there's any, seeing there's any interesting trivia.
Let's have a look. Yes, yeah, Starbuck splits her trainee pilots groups of two, tells them they're going to learn maneuver called Torchweave. This is a reference to Thatchweave, a two-plane defensive maneuver developed by the US Navy pilots during World War II. One of the paperback books Boomer knocks off the shelf when finding the bomb shelter in the restaurant is The Warbirds by Richard Herriman Jr., which revolves around dwindling US Air Force fighter wing single-handedly fighting a small-scale conflict.
See, I love little touches like that.
And then the third one is the opening bit of Act of Contrition, where a drone accidentally breaks loose from the storage rack. It spontaneously ignites, is based on a real incident aboard the USS Forrestal, where a missile accidentally ignited, which is what we were saying earlier, hit several planes on the flight deck. The coordinates, like chants the pilots were singing, was a rewritten version of the chant sung by the A-10 Thunderbolt pilots. Even.
Yeah, so that ties into what it says on the commentary.
Yeah.
I like the movie The Warbirds, though. That was a nice touch.
Hmm.
So it does also say on Battlestar Galactica Wiki that some of the books that are on the bookshelf, one of them is Adolf Hitler. So I don't know if someone just grabbed a stack of books and shoved them on the shelf, or unless the colonial empire had another Hitler.
Yeah, or a time machine.
Yeah. But that's on Star Trek Wiki. One of the books it's got a picture of Adolf Hitler on the cover. So, oops.
But yeah, of course, that's the part that we're talking about there, because of course we've got small parts of where we've got Halo and the other Sharon. That are on Caprica still, because they've been there 2 weeks now, I think they say. So 14 days, I think it said. So of course, they find this sort of hidden shelter. It's because of course they've got all the food and water that they need, radiation meds, blankets, and basically everything that they want. But when we're talking... what was it in water? I think it was sort of, we said about how they picked up sort of beacons, about whether or not it was deliberately set to be that place. I sort of was questioning why she was using the radiation meds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that they find more here, sort of whether or not that was a sort of link in, we're short, we need to find it, we have this signal, we need to go, as part of this sort of test that they're putting him through.
Yeah, which at this point in the story, you're still thinking, why?
But that's one of the things that they want to do to keep you coming back to watch it, to try and figure it all out.
Yeah, and it's not entirely clear as to whether this is a real shelter that was already there and it's just been coincidence that they've picked up the signal and they've sort of ran with it, or if it's been set up by the Cylons so that they'd find this shelter so that they could, get a bit cosy.
Yeah.
I think it was a setup, because as they go in, she's walking past the window with a hand on the glass.
Yeah, basically the restaurant's being observed by Six.
Yeah.
So they know they're there, and of course you've got the sort of completely robotic Cylons that then go in there in the first thing in the morning, which then is their little thing of her disappearing to talk to Six and can't remember what the other one's number is.
Is it five?
I think it might be five.
I think it's five, yeah.
Yeah, the one that was showing people round on the miniseries that got left at the space station anyway, him.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's basically jinxed.
If it was a real shelter, I mean, even if it was a real shelter that they were then using for their own purposes, I like the idea that shelter was there, and obviously the person that had set it up never got to use it, and that really highlighted how sudden the attack was. That, even if you were preparing for the worst, you had your Armageddon plan all planned out, that sometimes it just happens so fast that you don't have a chance.
Yeah,
and it plays into reality as well, because, in the storyline, basically the first war was 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people after 40 years will think, oh, we're going to be all right, we're safe now. But even now, in our society, people have nuclear shelters that they keep stocked just in case.
Yeah.
But then, all it takes is for them to go on holiday a few hundred miles away, and it this attack suddenly comes, and...
Well, this is the thing that always tickled me with people who had their own personal nuclear shelters, is you had to have time to get into that shelter. So if you're at work, or, you know, you're out at, you know, for argument's sake, the shop, getting, like, the weekly shop or something, and it happens, I think it's something like 3 minutes warning.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way your nuclear shelter is going to work for you is if you're no more than 3 minutes away from it.
So you can never leave your home.
Yeah, well, the thing is when sort of like when it comes to like World War II and things like that, when everybody had shelters, people all lived locally. Literally, they were a short walk away sort of thing for the most part. Sort of not like these days. It's like for me, even now, I'm working closer to home than I was just sort of like 4 months ago. It's still a half an hour journey by car for me to get home. And that's if the traffic's good. people these days work so much further afield. And sort of there are people who do even bigger commutes than sort of that as well. And of course, there's always these strange people that sort of drive trains and things up and down the country. And...
Yeah, not going to be anything up to 4 hours away, so... Yeah. Basically, if someone declared war and I was at work, I'd just say, yep, okay, might as well just go and have a beer.
Well, it's just like, right, we're heading this way, and I'm not stopping at any of the stops.
Yeah. And if you want to sack me afterwards, good luck with that. I'll be personally, given what Carl's been through, I do think this bit about the shelter, which just happens to have anti-radiation medicine, and he's had military. You do not think it's a bit, you know, convenient?
Well, as I said, I think it always was. Thing is, it never does get made clear sort of why all that happened. I think it's just a way to sort of keep that storyline of the rebuild of Caprica for when other things happen, which we'll get into at later episodes. I think it was just a way that they used to keep Caprica alive and to show what was going on. And it was also to show sort of the Cylons' interest in humans and relationships. That's why I don't think it ever played a big part in a lot of, especially these early episodes.
I don't think it played a big part in the series, to be honest. I mean, this is basically the mouse and the cheese in the maze.
Things, it only really comes together later on when sort of you know, or he finds out she's not the real sort of Sharon and things like that. So as I said, it's just very subtly worked in and continues across. And I think it's just there to lay the foundations to sort of, as I said, I don't want to try and give too much away for anybody who is listening who hasn't actually watched it. But yeah, I think this is just a way for it to sort of set the foundations really of later storylines that are used.
Yeah. Yeah, we will refer back to this in other episodes as this thread ties in with another thread and leads to what can only be called complications in the love department.
It's going to be a bad day for Halo.
Yeah, it's but we'll get to that when we get to the episode. So
yeah.
So any final thoughts from you two?
Yeah, well, we've not mentioned the president.
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot about
that.
Yeah.
She has a bad day, too, in this episode.
Yeah, this doctor cracks me up, though. I mean, he's lecturing her about that, and he's having a fag.
I know. He's sitting there with a cigarette in his mouth, and she goes, "Do you mind?" He's like, "Nope."
And guy, it's just like the definition of curmudgeon. He's just brilliant. He's so grumpy, but in such an endearing sort of a way.
Yeah, he makes Dr. McCoy have a perfectly brilliant bedside manner.
Oh, yeah.
But
like,
that
at least
scene...
Dr. McCoy never sparked up in the middle of an operating theatre.
But it's not just that, it's just the fact that she's going, excuse me, do you mind about him smoking? But she's the one that's already got cancer because she hadn't got herself checked out when, of course, it runs in the family anyway. So it's just her going, do you mind, when she already has cancer? And him going, no, I don't give a shit. And he hasn't. I just found that sort of like funny. It's just...
yeah, and any advice? Yeah, pray.
Yeah. He's such a comfort. Gotta love Dark Cuddle.
Yeah. You're gonna die, love. You know, you might as well just get your head around it, because it's gonna happen. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I also love the sort of roll of the eyes that you can see going on with him when she starts talking about Kamala. And I just get this feeling that he's like, oh my god, she's one of those airy fairy crap people.
Yeah, because he turns around and says, you're one of them, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh god. Not another one.
So you have heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is basically, I presume it's like some herbal. It's a bit the equivalent of someone going to a Chinese witch doctor or something.
Yeah, it's called Kamala extract, right, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's what they call the alternative therapy. But of course, one of the things that happens with it is, because it's a hallucinogenic, isn't it? Or it has hallucinogenic properties. Of course, that sort of works into what happens in, again, later episodes. But yeah, this is introducing sort of what becomes another sort of storyline later on, and then what becomes a big storyline later on as well, to do with sort of religion and presidency and all sorts of other things, which we'll have to talk about. The other thing that we have also missed is the poker game.
Oh yeah,
because not only do you have sort of Kara sort of basically daydreaming and just thinking about Zack, but they've also got it because they have the mention of the Cylon detector, because that's when Felix, I think it is, he turns around and says, so how's the Cylon detector going? Or someone says it to Felix, sorry, because it's Felix and Gaius that are working on it. I think it's Crashdown, he might have actually said it. And it's just like, what Cylon detector? If we were working on a Cylon detector, that would of course be sort of like restricted, and we wouldn't be able to talk about it. And then they start sort of saying about how sort of Cylons are actually look like humans, and sort of talking about all the sort of scuttlebutt.
Yeah, the rumour mill's been turning, and that's the first time that Boomer sort of catches wind of the Cylon detector as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And and again, it was only like sort of a minute and a half, 2 minutes, actually sort of talking about it. But again, it's just another one of these things where just one small, simple sort of like 10, 15 second sort of thing, and just highlights something that's still going on and then gets referenced later on in the show, which they do an awful lot in this series.
Yeah, they're very good at having an episode that's about one character, but they still manage to move the overarching plot along for everybody else.
Yeah, even though it's
just little 2 minute moments, they just manage to shift it all along so that the next episode can be about somebody else, but you know, you don't have to start from scratch again.
Yeah, and it's just these little tidbits, because that's one of the things with a lot of other sci-fi shows. It was always so very episodic that literally what happened in one show never carried over to what happened in other shows. And it's just like, yeah, the ship sort of almost gets destroyed, and yeah, magically they're talking about it like it's like only a couple of weeks later, and the ship is all nice and shiny and sort of no markings on it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas BSG is just like a 4 year long movie. It's just one continuous story from beginning to end.
Yeah, and of course they do it. Of course there are sort of gaps in the storyline between sort of some parts of the series and things like that. And they are sort of, they're really quite clear gaps, and then the storyline sort of picks up and sort of fills in. And a lot of the time it's with sort of flashbacks, and sometimes it's just sort of you see that storyline So it's not even a sort of flashback sometimes as well. And yeah, just the way they sort of cut all these things together throughout the entire sort of run, I always really liked. It was a sort of very clever way to sort of go back and forth. But of course, this all sort of then leads up to, as we sort of mentioned, that Kara sort of crashes on this planet. And this is when you really see how Adama feels about her. Because even though he'd just told her sort of not long ago to get out of his office before she can't sort of walk herself out of the office.
Yeah.
He's saying she will make it, she will make it, sort of trying to convince himself that she can make sort of like going up against 8 Cylon Raiders. And so, yeah, you can really see that no matter what she did, he still feels for her and loves her like a daughter, sort of thing. And that's then made even more clearer when, of course, it comes to the search for her, because they have problems doing this search because of the conditions of the planet, because it's just full of sort of dust and all sorts of other stuff. Visibility is really low and they're sort of using up huge amounts of fuel, and of course she only has limited oxygen, and sort of even the president ends up going to Galactica, and Rosalind just says that you guys are just way too emotional about this thing. You care for her, I understand, but it's not what the fleet needs. It's not gonna help us survive. Just keep wasting resources hoping she's still alive, when by all accounts she should be dead because she's out of oxygen. Sort of the fleet is vulnerable. Yeah, again, you get these sort of looks from Lee Adama and Commander Adama as they sort of like look at each other. They know she's right, but they don't want to admit it. They just want to sort of keep hold of this small light that she might still be alive. So, of course, then they start to prep to recall everyone and to sort of like start heading out. And of course, this is one of the most fun parts, because of course, while all this is going on, we see sort of Kara. She finds this raider that went down because it's still intact, and we actually learn about the raiders here, about how it is sort of almost a living ship, just with sort of a metal shell around it, really.
Yeah, it's more like an animal than a machine.
Yeah, and sort of she manages to get in by sort of climbing inside, and sort of then she's just sort of trying to figure out where everything is, because of course she knows that basically it's a flying machine, so it's got its pitch and its yaw and sort of something to fire weapons, and of course it's a living thing, so it's more than likely to need oxygen, so she finds a way to breathe. So she just literally starts cutting into things and pressing things, and it's just, I like the bit where she sort of presses something and it fires the weapon. She goes, right, I won't be touching that again then. And that always makes me laugh, because she just says it so casually. But of course then, yeah, she gets the raider flying as they're sort of getting ready to sort of head out. And of course, the only person who can get a Viper out to meet her or to take her on, because they of course think she's a Cylon, is Lee Adama. And of course, yeah, just his sort of thing going, God, this thing can fly. And just like, Galactica? This thing's acting weird. It's just like, what do you mean? It's flying in formation with me. And it's just like, what do you mean it's flying in formation? And then, of course, it sort of spins round and she's sort of painted on the bottom of it. Sort of Starbuck.
Yeah, I always wanted to know where she got the paint.
Well, I think it was just blood.
But it was yellow, wasn't it?
No, it was red. I'm sure it was. Yeah. I'm sure it was red.
Oh, yeah. Okay. If it was red, it was from the... Yeah, it would have been from the ship. But I don't know why I thought it was yellow.
But no, that bit was just great. But of course, as everybody's sort of celebrating back on Galactica and everything else, and sort of you still got Villadama, who sort of all seriousness saying, right, bring it in, but any wrong move, blow it out of the sky. And sort of still sort of thinking sort of bit, it's still got to be down to business and sort of the safety of everybody aboard, sort of thing.
I've just found a picture. It was yellow, but it was tape. I think she must have had a roll of tape in her ship when it crashed. I'm sure it was yellow, but it wasn't painted on. It was tape.
It was tape on. Well, yeah. That leads me to think, how the hell did that tape stay on as it went through the atmosphere?
Yes.
But then that also raises the question, how did she not get sucked out of that little tiny hole which she made? Because what did she use to make it? It was an airtight seal. Especially if she cut her way in as well. So there are a few questions to do with that that part. It's just like, yeah, that doesn't quite work, that, but it's still sort of a fun part.
Yeah. We'll let it slide, because otherwise it was a very cool moment.
But I keep forgetting to turn the commentary on for these things. So whether or not it is actually explained away. There's just a little things like that. It's just like, yeah, that wouldn't quite work. But it's still sort of something very clever. I think what they did with the ships... was very clever. It was very different, because of course in the original Battlestar Galactica, the raiders that they had then were all sort of manned by sort of three or four Cylons, which literally all they ever said was "by your command." And I thought this way it was so different compared to how they'd done it before. With it sort of inside basically being a living creature. And of course they then expand on that in future episodes as well, which is to do with how sort of even though they die, they don't. But we'll get into that in a later episode.
That fun's still to come.
Oh yes. So, but yeah, as we sort of said, though there is one sort of overarching story which was about Starbuck and her relationship with Zach and sort of Lee and Villadama. You've just got all these little bits of storylines that just move so much along in this episode. It's just very, very cleverly done. I think, especially for this season... this comes for me directly after 33, as in my favourite ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely an enjoyable one to watch.
We've pretty much covered everything. There's, for all that it's an episode about Starbuck, there's actually quite a lot that goes on, and we've touched on all the little subplots that are woven in there. But overall, yeah, one of the better ones from season one, I think.
Most definitely. Alrighty. Well, thank you all for joining us. Take care, everybody.